we're looking at space opera and sagas of space material, you could go back to the episodes Journey's End and The Stolen Earth as being major epics in our. There was no dark star exploding there, you know, exactly. There was all, you know, it's a way to actually cope with this whole sequence. Anyway, Graham Harper, director extraordinaire, welcome to the Midweek Drive.
Oh, thank you very much. Hello, everyone.
Have you seen it, Ben? Have you seen the Star Wars thing that I know we spoke about sort of last time you were on the show, when effectively you closed the Midweek Drive season for 2015?
Yes.
Phil Leonis, he was out swanning around doing his stuff, apparently meeting up with people that he hadn't seen for years, just because he directed them on some kind of Karl Rove movie. By the way, it's called Karl Rove, I Love You, if you want to access the thing from that. No, Graham stepped into the breach, and I think it's fair to say he was going to see Star Wars The Force Awakens, but we don't know whether he has been to see that, nor indeed...
What
the verdict is.
I have been to see it, and I came out going, yes, that was a great movie. That was top class of its kind.
Well, there we are. Better than you could have directed yourself, or would you say no?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, it was stunning. Really good ideas, clever, and exciting. It never stopped being exciting. I thought it was really good, as opposed to just loads of effects. It was a good romping story with nice bits of comedy. I thought it was terrific.
Well, there we have it, you see. It's all fans. So, Eva, there's something for you to check out.
Yes, I will.
Eva, why have you not seen it yet? What's wrong with you?
I'm sorry, okay?
On another note, have you all seen James Bond?
Spectre.
Yes.
Spectre. Yeah. Now, what did you think of that?
I did like it, actually. But I feel like I need to watch it again, because I think the first time I watched it, I was so excited to see it because it had been so long since the last Bond movie.
3 years.
So I feel like maybe it wasn't as good as I thought. But I did enjoy it. It was very action-packed and everything. But not as good as Star Wars, obviously.
I agree with you. I didn't like it. I thought it was... I'm afraid I felt I was robbed.
Robbed?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Robbed?
Yeah, I didn't think... I didn't feel there was any great acting going on of any sort. I think it was people taking the money and running. Lots of running.
Do you know, one thing I thought was that the plot had sort of been simplified a bit, and I feel like maybe that was to engage a wider audience or something like that, but Bond films are normally really, really complicated and, you know, have little twists and turns, but I felt like it was a lot more simplistic, really.
I didn't know the baddie. I didn't know the actor who played the baddie. I've never seen him before, although everybody tells me he's very famous. I don't think there was any... Where was the evil? Or where was the...
The pussycat. The white pussycat. It was all compressed into Ernst Stavro Blow. You did see that.
There was a little hint.
It was so... That character was so well established originally, and he was kind of just walking a shadow, walking through. I found it really a letdown.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was kind of like the beginning of the film, he was mysterious and hidden away, and then as soon as you sort of see him on screen for the first time, it was like the mystery was taken away, and it...
Well, who?
It was like, oh.
It was Christopher Waltz. You know, I mean, he's been a star of many a Quentin Tarantino scenario as well.
Good.
So, yeah, it's marvellous.
It was better than Quantum of Solace, though. Let's say that.
I don't remember Quantum of Solace, and I saw it, so yes, there we are.
It's one of those areas that clearly you need to see all four together to actually see the wonderment that the new incarnation of Bond has actually put together. Anyway, let us move on from that perspective. Eva, have you seen Spectre?
No, I'm not.
Eva, what the heck? Sort your life out.
I'm not really much of a film person. I'm not...
I think we should kick you off this show.
No.
Okay, bye.
No, I'm joking.
Bit harsh, I would have thought.
So I'll take you to the cinema, though.
We clearly need to just gradually ease her along to this whole sequence.
Dip the toe in the water.
Yeah, exactly. Dip the toe. I don't be just swimming.
Wonderful reference to the London Boat Show, which sadly we won't be covering this Friday, but we might do something next week. So fingers crossed we'll be there in some way, shape, or form. We've got our press passes. It's just time, illnesses and time, and various other bits and pieces. Nevertheless, let's talk BAFTA, because of course you are a BAFTA award-winning soul, Graham, and I think it's time to actually sort of look at what Richard Fitzwilliams will all also be referring to with respect to BAFTA and the recently released awards package for BAFTA. So in terms of nominations, I don't know if you're sort of up for this, but apparently we have The Revenant, Spotlight, Carol, Room and Bridge of Spies all up for Best Film.
I haven't seen any of them. Well, I know Revenant's about to come out, or it's just come out, isn't it?
It's just about to arrive.
Sorry, say the list again.
We have, The Revenant, Spotlight, Carol, Room, and Bridge of Spies.
I've seen Bridge of Spies, and that's it.
Oh, Bridge of Spies is the one...
Spielberg.
Carl...
Berlin.
Gary, what's name? The
Tom Hanks.
Thriller, isn't it?
Exactly, Tom
Spy
Hanks.
Thriller, yeah.
Exactly. Best Actress, Saoirse Ronan for Brooklyn, Charlotte Rampling for 45 Years, Rooney Mara for Carol. Well, let's face it, she wasn't going to get it for Sue Storm in The Fantastic Four, was she? Kate Blanchett, well, she wasn't, sorry, Graham, but she was probably the best thing about the movie was Rooney Mara, but other than that, sorry.
Her hair, changed throughout the movie, which really confused me.
And she didn't get her powers until this. And then we also have Kate Blanchett for Carol and Jennifer Lawrence for Joy. In terms of best actor, it's also sort of put it into place from that point of view. Best actor, a number of lines are there. Eddie Redmayne for The Danish Girl, Leonardo DiCaprio for The Revenant, Michael Fassbender for Steve Jobs, Tom Hanks for Bridge of Spies, and Bryan Cranston for Trumbo. Or does it really matter, Graham? I mean, that's the end of the day. Do we get to the sort of stage of thinking, Lord, because you know what Richard Fitzwilliam is going to be saying from about 25 minutes on, when he's going to be so excited about this. We've got the BAFTAs, we've got the Golden Globes, we've got the Academy Awards. I mean, it's kind of like his whole piece is written for the next 2 weeks, really. It's this season.
I didn't see it, but I bet the Steve Jobs gets that film will get it.
And, of course, no mention for Star Wars at all, presumably, but still, I suppose it's...
But that was the luck of Spielberg, wasn't it? For years and years and years, he didn't get a look in until, I think, he did Colour of Purple, wasn't it?
Was, I think, the first step, and, of course, Schindler's List.
Schindler's List, definitely. I mean, and you just think, what, this man brought masses of people back to the cinema. Mm-hmm. He deserves it just for that alone, I think, and he made one film which I think was a flop, which for some reason I
1941.
Loved. Oh, it was stunning.
Jeez.
But you didn't like it?
No, I thought it was a musical. It was wonderful. It was like, what happened if the Pearl Harbor invasion had gone elsewhere and, in fact, the Japanese had actually invaded in 1941, a bit earlier, really. I sense there's actually a similar sort of thing probably being developed with respect to North Korea and the atom bomb as we speak, in fact. Nice to know that they've become a fourth atomic bomb power. Although people are saying, no, you need a much bigger explosion if you've got a real atom bomb. What are they asking for, really?
I don't think it matters, is it? It's going to... Yeah,
exactly. It's quite depressing, really. Still, never mind, Graham. We just have to sort of say, for the next generation, we've had our fun. Let's just, let's blow up now. Let's press that button, press that red button, and end it all.
No, don't just do that.
Okay, fair enough. We'll hold fire.
Stay positive.
Would you say, Graham, that you're more of an action movie person, or do you prefer the more thoughtful aspects of movies?
Well, here we are. I think I'm more geared to doing action-adventure, but the problem that I have is the story's got to be good. There's no point for... I don't want to just see action as a viewer. I want to see a really great story, but I like the action to be terrific. It doesn't have to be over the top, but really exciting and riveting and gripping. Hold you, make you want to know they're going to be okay, or maybe they're not going to be okay, whatever it is, whatever we're trying to say. The story's got to be good. It can't just be action.
And that's the kind of thinking that makes Dark Star one of the general sort of wonders of the day-to-day, really. It works on that basis. Did you get a chance to listen to Graham's podcast?
No, I still haven't. It's on my list of things to do, I promise.
Oh, it might make you go to sleep.
No.
Not at all. We're already
surely
working
not
on a second mini-series of... mini-series of podcast packages designed to make you go to sleep, otherwise known as the Culture Shakers.
No, I don't mean in general. I just meant my one might make you go to sleep. There was one before... No, it sounded as I was saying that. There was one Phil Linster's I thought was terrific.
Or in, yeah, Phil Lianis, as opposed to Phil Lianis. Lianis.
Sterling. Sorry.
It's all right, they have a problem with Leicestershire. Don't worry about it. I say they, obviously, sorry, alienating us. Notice the way I sort of separate the Californian director from, of course, the British version here. You know, the British director, Californian director, separated by nutritionist Fiona Hunter and Richard Fitzwilliams. It's the way forward. That's the one thing. Did you have a good New Year, Graham?
I did. It was, I went... And I didn't say Happy New Year to any of you, so Happy New Year all.
Happy New Year.
I'd forgotten, it's about 8 days ago, isn't it? my son and his family, who live in Finland, came over for New Year. And they rented an apartment in the centre of London, because of kids and comings and goings. And they asked us to come and share New Year's Eve with them, where we could stand on their veranda, 8 stories up, and look at the fireworks. It was extraordinary. So we had a really good New Year's Eve.
Oh,
which
wow.
is wonderful. Phil Lianis has actually just sent in a piece of information here. And I have to hold my hand up and say, yeah, put it down to the cold. Looking forward to my first weekly appearance of 2016 on the Midweek Drive for Siren FM and Southside Broadcasting. Thank you, Phil. We're looking forward to featuring you as well. especially looking forward to explaining to host Alex Leftuke that Rooney Mara is not the same person as her sister, Kate Mara, who was in Fantastic Four. All right, so
it's the
fine.
Mara sisters.
Yeah, at least I didn't say it was Kate O'Mara, who, of course, passed away a year or so ago, and he co-presented with various other things, but no.
You know,
Kate
there's
Mara,
so many names you've got to remember. Yeah. I think we can let you off.
Well, you know, obviously Phil hasn't. And he's quite clearly sort of jumped down that throat
well,
to say,
Phil's
oi.
Phil's just ruthless, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But
he doesn't let anything slide.
I think he's giving as good as he gets.
Yeah, well, that has been said a great deal about the Lianis Meister. And we had hoped to actually have a range of new jingles. In fact, we do have a batch of jingles, but tragically, we're still waiting for them to be fully sort of finished. They're in post-production, actually. Yeah. We had intended to launch them today, but no, we couldn't. Anyway, just a reminder for Phil, this is the melody that actually sort of is there. I suppose, Graham, you wouldn't have a clue which episode of Star Trek this is from.
No.
Exactly.
Neither me.
But clue, if there's a clue there, when you said the word ruthless, there's a message there. Okay?
Oh.
Yeah?
Oh.
I'll say no more.
I'm like psychic.
Very spooky. Just goes to show you still have the power. That's the important thing. And that's not Philip Power Taylor. Was it just me, or was it something that we saw this obsession with darts over the holiday period, which I thought, really, you know, why? I mean, darts is not a sport, it's a game. Eva, darts, is it a sport or is it a game?
I would think of it as a bit of both, really.
A bit of both?
Yeah. She's on the fence. I'm on the fence.
What about yourself, Graham? Darts, is it a sport or is it a game?
Well, it's not an Olympic sport, but it's a sport. I think you have to do a lot of drinking, and you have to do a lot of... I think it is a sport. Mm. I'm sort of stuck because I know what you mean. I can see them fighting for it to become an Olympic game, and I know that will be refused.
Yeah, exactly. It's like there are people in South Korea now trying to get computer games as Olympic games on the basis
that
of
seems crazy.
Finger button pushing.
This is Rachel Abbott, whoa. And when I'm not producing all manner of audio goodness for On Broadcast, I always like to check out the latest news and views of Emma Tinson, Jessica Ward, and other Midweek Drivettes on the Midweek Drive for Siren FM.
In fact, we wanted to actually ask Jessica, but we may never have that chance. Who knows?
I haven't seen her in so long.
She did actually look in. She graced us with her presence briefly Thursday.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Wednesday. It
was the last Wednesday.
Yeah. But why is it that the Isle of Man has now become the Bitcoin capital of the world?
Has it?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Apparently it's home to lots of millionaires, etc. Jessica's getting very quiet about that whole sequence, but we need to do an Isle of Man scenario. Speaking of outside broadcast location reports, Graham, and as we might have to sort of change around our sort of timings with respect to the London Boat Show, what's the state of progress with respect to the studio tour with your good self? Is that going to happen in 2016?
Yeah, I'm sure it'll happen in 2016, but when? Oh, there's no news.
Well, in February, we're hopefully going down to London to check out the National Film Theatre with Richard Fitzwilliam. So that's something you might like to accompany us on, effectively. We'll give you sort of a couple of dates for that. And, of course, we've still got the proposed trip to Jersey, which we suggested in the first part of the programme. So.
Can I come?
Well, I think, actually, that's what I think, because obviously you are the person, who, other than Anna Lewis, has spent more of your life in Jersey, directing Bergerac.
Well,
I'm not talking about a euphemism.
About 6 weeks.
You know? Exactly. Well, about 6 weeks, that's more than I've ever been to Jersey. I mean, 6 weeks more than you've been to Jersey?
I have never been to Jersey.
Never, exactly. So, Eva?
No, never.
Exactly. So you could be our sort of ace in the hole there to actually say that's where John Nettles
you
actually
stood.
You
can be our guide.
Yeah? That'd be brilliant. Yes, that's true. Yes.
Back in the last century. Yeah. Open itself up to all sorts of wonderful things there.
Yes, I could take you back in the last century, absolutely.
Mm. Great, and would you like to ask Emma how her fandom and citizen journalism dissertation is coming on?
Emma, how's your fandom and citizen journalism? I can't even say it. How's that coming along?
It's okay. It's not as far as I'd hoped. Writing a dissertation is very hard. I didn't know this. I was not prepared. But, yeah, I'm sure that by the date it is due in, I will have 10,000 words of goodness.
Can I ask you a question? And that does this sum up your end of term or end of university?
End of life, really, Graham, as we know.
It's
one of the bigger sections of it, but I do have lots of other modules to do as well. Like this year I have to make a 10-minute documentary.
Oh, that's boring, isn't it? So hard to do.
But yeah, I've got lots of little things to do, so it's a combination.
And that's what makes Emma Tinson a Renaissance woman.
I'm just a multitasker.
No, but you have to be. Oh, you will. You have to be in this day and age.
Do you know which gentleman is credited with actually launching the whole folk rock movement? Tom Rush.
Must be Bob Dylan.
No, Tom Rush, actually. Tom Rush. We're going to hear some Tom Rush in a few seconds to take us around to Fiona Hunter, a nutritionist with advice on staying with those New Year healthy resolutions that we've been talking about and working through that whole process. Meanwhile, Emma, would you like to put those last two questions to the Harpermeister, please?
Of course. Harpermeister, that's good.
Yeah, that's me.
Graham, it's been lovely talking to you. Have you
Thanks
had
you.
A good telephonic link with us this evening?
I have. It's been very enjoyable.
Fantastic. And will you join us again on the programme anytime soon?
Yes. As soon as he calls, I'll be there.
I've been out walking. I don't do that much talking these days. These days I seem to think I've not forgotten now.
So the first question we actually put to Fiona Hunter in betwixt sort of coughing and spluttering across the vacation period, ace nutritionist, was, you know, are we losing the plot when it actually comes to dietary tips and actually sort of staying on the wagon?
Well, no, we can't. We shouldn't. January is quite a dull month, though, isn't it? And when the weather's like it is at the moment. But what we need to do is to plan for success. You know, and we shouldn't let the January blues beat us. It's all about good planning and making sure that the goals that we set are not unrealistic.
Now, that's pretty crucial to the whole side of things, because looking at this Laughing Cow survey, it seems that, you know, we get a number of sort of interesting gender biases to this. I mean, there are women who actually say they don't have the willpower that men do. I can't believe that. I mean, I guess that's just ridiculous from that point of view. But it's the temptation to actually sort of say, oh, well, it's a bit dull this morning. It's unpleasant. The weather's not good. I'll just treat myself. I'll fall off the healthy living bandwagon.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that we can talk about there. Where should we start? The planning for success is important. So you have to build an environment that promotes good habits. So if you open your fridge and you see lots of, you know, leftover bits of, you know, bits of cake and all sorts of things that are going to tempt you, you're much more likely to fall off the wagon. So one of the things that I've been advising people to do is to detox their fridge. And today is a good day to do it. So look at your fridge right at the back and the freezer as well, and get rid of all those things that you know that you're going to find it hard to resist. You can either freeze them, you can ditch them, or if they're not opened, you know, you've got packs of things, take them to your local food bank or take them into the office or something like that. And then make sure that your fridge and your kitchen are full of lots of good, healthy snacks and you know, good things to eat.
Clearly, healthy eating and a healthy lifestyle is, as its name suggests, for life, not just for Christmas. It can have so many benefits in all so many ways. But actually, just looking financially, it seems we can actually make some huge savings in January just through actually being a little bit more frugal in what we choose to actually spend our money on.
Yeah, and one of the things that was identified in this survey from the Laughing Cow brand was that two-fifths of people in your area, 36%, said that they were going to be dining out less, spending less on, which will help them spend less on food, because eating out, even if it's a, you know, coffee in the morning or a sandwich at lunchtime, can be expensive. You know, we're not talking about necessarily, you know, fancy restaurants, a sandwich at lunchtime. So it can all add up. So again, another good tip for anyone who's serious about wanting to make changes to the diet is try and plan your meals. Take a packed lunch to work with you. Not only are you going to save time, you're going to save money, but you're much less likely to be tempted by other things available. So, you know, the feeling, you've had a busy day at work, you get into the sandwich shop at lunchtime, you plan to have a healthy salad or a sandwich. You see the donuts or the muffins or the, you know, millionaire shortbread, that sort of thing, and you think, oh, I just have one of those as well. So if you can make a sandwich at home or packed lunch at home, then you're much less vulnerable to those sort of problems.
Mm. One of the elements that I think you put forward for you, and in fact I'm standing firm by the fact it was you who actually originated this, is never go shopping on an empty stomach, which I thought was a wonderful sort of line.
Expand on this one. That's just setting yourself up for disaster, really. You've already said that willpower is a problem for some people, and it's not just women, I don't think, but women are more exposed to food than men often. But if you go shopping when you're hungry, you're much less you're much more likely to be tempted down into the biscuit aisle or, you know, cakes and buns and things like that. If you really haven't got any willpower, try shopping online. I don't know whether you've ever tried it, but I find it quite helpful, because not only are you less likely to be tempted, you can actually look at the, you know, the nutritional value of the food that you're buying, the calories, the fat. You can compare brands.
Makes perfect sense, as ever. And this line about people blaming their partners, I mean, surely that's got to be a recipe for relationship disaster. You can't sort of say, look, I'm sorry, darling, I fell off the diet, it's because I love you.
Well, people do. 28% of people in the Lincoln area said that gave that as their reason for falling off the diet. I think we become a little bit more comfortable if we're in a long-term stable relationship. Again, a good piece of advice would be to enlist the support of family and friends. And, you know, even if your partner isn't interested in losing weight, you know, they should be interested in eating more healthily and also helping you if that's one of your goals. So, you know, sit down and have a conversation and say, look, I'm really serious about this. I'd like you to help me. But then you need to go that one step further and tell them how they can do it, you know. So if you could, you know, not buy biscuits or not do this or not do that or do this, then you're much more likely to succeed.
We've spoken today, obviously, about some of the stresses and strains and aspects that can actually fall or lead us to temptation, and looked very much at the Lincoln area, obviously. But are these statistics kind of likely to repeat themselves in the Western world? I mean, could our California listeners be sort of saying, oh, yes, I identify with that sort of issue?
Yeah, I think it's true the world over. We, you know, we all... Well, 50% of us set resolutions in the new year, so that's one in two. And often those resolutions don't last very long. So, for instance, in the Lincoln area, the average diet lasts about 15 days before we fall off the wagon. That's
only 360-odd hours, Fiona. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, but, you know, you're not the worst. So in the West Midlands, it's 14 days, so you've beat them.
Well, there we are. That's interesting. Fiona, is there a place to go to online? You mentioned, obviously, online shopping being quite an interesting way of actually taking on board. Is there a place where we can actually access details? Is it the Laughing Cow website, or do we go to sort out various other things?
Well, for ideas on healthy snacks, you can go to thelaughingcow.co.uk or their Facebook page if you're into Facebook. For information on healthy eating and general well-being, if you go to Public Health England, if you go to their website, there are lots of top tips there.
Fiona, it's been fantastic. I still await to the announcement in the next year. Obviously, it'll be Dame Fiona Hunter, because I think it's only a matter of time with your services to nutrition and a whole range of other factors. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been okay with you?
It's been lovely. Thank you very much, Alex.
Well, Fiona, hopefully we'll speak again in 2016 as the whole year proceeds. And remember, it's all willpower, but there's always a way through. That's the important thing. And I love the tip about sort of never go shopping on an empty stomach. Absolutely critical. Take care now.
Goodbye now.
Absolutely. Never go shopping on an empty stomach. That's the key message to come across. Isn't that right, Richard Fitzwilliams?
I wouldn't dispute it for a second. My most recent, however enjoyable shopping expedition was, in fact, for friends, kids over from California, and I went into the Star Wars department, the Lego. I mean, all that was terrific fun. It was quite interesting to see how they made them up, and it's also interesting to see the vast range, the Stormtroopers, the Daisy Ridley, John Boyega models. Oh, terrific.
And I take it overall you enjoyed the stuff. We've been talking extensively on the show today. Oh, hello. Honestly, those Star Wars creatures, they get everywhere.
Sounded like an Ewok,
yes. Yeah. Those Ewoks, we don't know where they're going to sort of turn up next. But in terms of the whole sequence, I think it's fair to say both Emma and we settled on 9.5 out of 10 for Star Wars, really.
Yeah, I loved it so much. I was so... I feel like there was no point in the movie where there was a point for me to think about how it's going. Sometimes there's a film where it has a slow point where you think, oh, how's this film going? But I literally, it was so fast-paced and there was emotion, there was action. And I think throughout the whole thing, I was just engaged and, like, definitely captured into this whole sci-fi world. And I absolutely loved it. And I did, like, well up a little bit as soon as the opening titles came up. I got very excited.
Oh, yes, indeed. And interesting to hear that as, you know, a take on it, because the enthusiasm has been replicated, as you know, in so many, not by absolute everyone, but almost everyone, because there was so much to enjoy. And I'm glad you made the point about the pace of it, the action sequences, and the various characters, both brought back and new ones. If I had to make a point about the editing, there were certain scenes you could make. Why bother to nitpick what it needed to do, and it was so important at a time when a lot of cinemas are having to change and change drastically. The threat of streaming is concentrating the minds of cinema owners wonderfully all over London. And we've got the Empire, Leicester Square, a huge IMAX screen where I saw Star Wars, but also so many cinemas are being refurbished, but that in itself doesn't mean what's on the screen is good. Sam Goldwyn once quipped, widescreen and just makes a bad film twice as bad. And in the case of Star Wars, we've got this enthusiasm, and we've got the it's imagination and the need for fantasy, which has always been part of our society, from Robin Hood and the Arthurian legends to Harry Potter and the Ring.
Phil Leonis has recently been to see The Revenant, and I think he was there to actually find out what exactly a Revenant was, according to his Facebook update. Would you say that that's very much in the running for awards? I mean, we were teasing ahead earlier, a little sneak preview to tomorrow's session with your good self, Richard, to some of the sort of likely BAFTA nominations that we're going to be hearing from, and DiCaprio and The Revenant certainly well up there.
I think so. I mean, The Revenant is a particularly fascinating film. Funnily enough, I attended the director's private showing, which was interesting, and briefly met him, and he was talking about how he specifically was looking to create painterly visions in so many of these sequences. One of the most amazing things that I am discussing this film, mindful of the fact that not everybody is going to want to go and see a film about enormous suffering, Leonardo DiCaprio's character's survival and subsequent revenge, in a film that is not short and is full of the most extraordinary scenes, including one where he is savaged by a bear, would not appeal to a great one. And one does have to ask the audience the potential of a film like this, the superb way it's shot, the extraordinary use of sound, the artistic qualities that may very well appeal to critics, which I'll be talking about on Thursday, and, you know, which undoubtedly are very, very striking. Tom Hardy's performance, I could go on and on as a critic, but if I'm actually wanting to go to the cinema, am I wanting to see somebody in the dreadfully haggard and tormented state that DiCaprio's character is in, based on a real life event, of course, for such a long time. I raise this point also with reference to a film I've just seen again, in which we did discuss Steve Jobs. And I mentioned this because the movie, which I greatly admired, which got critical raves, which is structurally fascinating, directed by Danny Boyle, Michael Fassbender, superb performance, also Kate Winslet, all of them, in fact, has been a financial catastrophe, because it is not the sort of thing that apparently, regrettably, people want to go to the cinema to see. And I ask myself, Alejandro González Iñárritu is the most inventive director we saw last year with Birdman, we saw before with Babel and other films that he's made, that he's so versatile. But I am a little concerned about the box office potential of The Revenant, regarding the fact that it's going to be up against films such as the docudrama Spotlight, which is about the investigation of priests for child abuse in Boston, and The Exposure, the best newspaper, also film set in a newspaper office, and All the President's Men, in my opinion. I think the two will go head-to-head, and we have got, for example, Carol, love story, unconventional love story set in the 1950s with superb performances by Rooney Mara and Cate Blanchett. That will, I think, be considered. And of course, there's The Bridge of Spies, a very, very powerful movie. Spielberg on absolutely tip-top form and remarkable performances. Brooklyn, possibly not for Ward's consideration, but certainly Saoirse Ronan possible for her role, and it's again too close to call for the best actresses.
And that brings us around to the end of the sneak preview without any mention of the awards and the New Year honours. The fact that Emma Thompson was overlooked again.
Well, I mean, I would just make 2 points. Firstly, it does tick some very, very important boxes. Remember the 1,200 names, and the vast majority were very, very good. But 76% given for philanthropic work, it's important to remember there's been a link for community work. And the other point I'd make is, why ruin so much of it with one or two, especially one civil servant who should never have got anything?
Well, there we are, particularly when Emma Tinson actually shares with your good self, Richard, a place in the Midweek Drive Adventures in Broadcasting calendar. There we are.
Indeed, Emma.
Right, Emma, last two questions for Richard, because he's back with us tomorrow morning when you won't be back with us
tomorrow morning. I know, I'm going to have to tune in. But Richard, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this evening?
Indeed, yes. In fact, it was supposed to be about the honours, and somehow we never even got to the royal engagement.
No mention at all about the excitement of Hateful Eight and Tarantino, but that's for another
story. Well,
it's quite interesting. I haven't seen Hateful Eight because there has not been a screening. I think that they've had very, very few, but I shall indeed before the Golden Globe ceremony, which, of course, is on Sunday. Wow. And we will see what Quentin Tarantino makes of this very interesting film.
And I'm sure Phil Leonis will also sort of have something to say about that as well. Next question, Emma.
Will you be joining us again on the programme anytime soon?
Tomorrow, no less. Exactly. Yes, absolutely.
Very exciting.
Together,
well, I'll also be discussing, apart from The Revenant, I'll be discussing Jennifer Lawrence, a great favourite, I have to say, in a movie that is going to...
All that of the Director of Communications at the University of Lincoln, Ellie Sample as well. Outrageous.
Let's have some music in here, Boiler.
Sure thing.
To many people, the letters E.T. signify phoning home, early Drew Barrymore, or cycling over the moon. For midweek drive aficionados, E.T. will always be the Surrey legend that is Emma Tinson.
I can't believe that your work or your father's work has actually banned him from actually downloading and listening to the midweek drive.
I know.
It's outrageous.
Going to have to censorship write a formal complaint.
Please. You know, I mean, there's... Anyway, enough of such stuff. We have the Leonis Meister on the line.
Hi, Phil.
I feel I'm responsible probably for the show getting banned. It's usually me and something I've said. Let's make this clear. Just as Michael B. Jordan has made up for his participation in Fantastic Four through his outstanding star turn in Creed, playing Apollo Creed's son in the latest sequel to the Rocky franchise, which will probably get a Best Picture nomination, so too has Kate Mara made up for her participation in Fantastic Four by being one of the stars of The Martian.
Exactly.
At the same time as, of course, her sister, Rooney Mara, starred in Carol. So there we go. Just a little bit of genealogy, as I like to call it, where actors are concerned in each and every show.
Well, let's face it. I mean, these days we've already heard the people complaining that Tippi Hedren and Melanie Griffith, you know, they're not getting work because of the ageism in Hollywood. We've obviously got the Carrie Fisher views that were shared over the airwaves. Not quite white slave trade, but still, that's Carrie.
Wait a minute. People are complaining. Wait, who's complaining that Tippi Hedren's not getting work?
Her granddaughter.
Really? Oh, her granddaughter, who is getting work,
yes,
is doing that. You know, here's my favorite question that was asked of me the other day. I'm not going to mention names. It might have been by Lily Holloman, who asked me, well, why does Dakota Johnson have a different last name than her mother?
Because of Miami Vice.
Yeah, I know, because it's her father.
Exactly, yeah. Don Johnson.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah, Don Johnson, exactly. But it didn't bother her in any way, apparently, that Melanie Griffith has a different last name than her mother.
No.
Or really, for that matter, many women in the world have a different last name.
And there you have it. It was Eva Cassidy, Eva MacDonald, Eva MacDonald, Eva Cassidy. Easily put
not
together.
Not quite the same.
Just a bit different.
Now, that musical clip from Shore Leave that you played.
Oh, yeah.
The classic Star Trek episode, Shore Leave. Am I correct? Now, obviously, you know, when they did the first season of Star Trek, and this is one of the things that is so much fun, and I think actually did play, gosh, I'm listening to myself and I sound like I'm setting up for a joke, but I'm really not. I think one of the key elements that helped Star Trek succeed as well as it did was that many of these beautiful instrumental themes that were introduced in the first half of the first season would then be used and incorporated into later episodes. And so there was a certain sense of familiarity with the music that kind of tied some of these episodes thematically together, even though back then, as with all of television, everything was standalone. There was no continuing story arc. So my question for you, Alex, is am I wrong in thinking that that piece may also have been used in This Side of Paradise? With the spores?
And indeed, also being used in Celeste Yarnell's very own The Apple, in the sort of...
Oh, of course. Sam.
So yes, you've had that whole scenario there, the slight romanticization of Gerald Freed and Alexander Courage, with, of course, the theme Ruth, named after one of James T. Kirk's former loves, who appears, as if by magic, on the planet in which thoughts become things. It's like Mike Dooley world all over again.
For people who have not availed themselves of the original Star Trek, and I can understand some of the things that stand in the way of someone delving into it, but one of the things that really is there to appreciate is these full orchestral scores. Music and television back then, wow, it was downright cinematic in a way that even films of the last 20 or 30 years have failed to be.
So there you have it, Eva. Just one reason why you should actually immerse yourself in the joys of cinematic movies and the music. Sorry, I felt Eva's been being picked on, I think, a bit today. Sorry, don't worry.
I don't.
Not by me.
I'm sorry.
That's very true. So what have you made of the programme, Phil? Where do you want to take us? Do you want to go down the action movie syndrome, the cult TV film environment, fandom and citizen journalism? Are you ready to be interviewed by Emma Tinson? Any of those kind
or
of
or just lines? Take us somewhere new.
I walked out of The Force Awakens saying, huh, maybe I'm not much of a movie person. Anyway, I have so much to bring up that's been discussed so far on the show. But this Spectre conversation, the latest James Bond film, I was so glad to hear this, both from Graham's perspective, where he didn't know two-time Oscar-winning actor Christoph Waltz, and was therefore able to just assess the performance. Because there are actors who slide by in roles and performances on their reputation. That doesn't necessarily mean, as great and as talented as they are, that they were well cast. And Christoph Waltz was not well cast. He's not an interesting villain. And these Bond films, like so many films and television shows in the action genre and the comic book genre, they do tend to rise or fall on the quality of their villains. You need to have a villain as interesting, as compelling, at least as powerful as the hero confronting them. And you really don't in Spectre, which is such a disappointment to see the return of this villain after so many decades, and it's underwhelming. The other thing, they don't do any favors for him by this need to make everything be a personal James Bond story. Everything now has to come out of his past, which was not how the James Bond franchise was built and maintained and why it was so popular. All that said, I did appreciate that for the first time in the Daniel Craig era, we got what one could call a James Bond adventure, however. It was really about him out and about globetrotting, trying to solve some kind of mystery, some kind of crisis. We really hadn't had that in his run. So that's my take on that. But hats off to the, was it the BAFTA nominations that you announced for an outstanding assemblage of films? 4.5 great films were nominated, according to you, for the BAFTA for Best Picture. You've got The Carol and Spotlight, which the film critics around the world have hailed as two of the best three films of 2015. The overwhelming choice by critics around the world for the best film of 2015 was Mad Max Fury Road. Not surprised. surprised, I guess, to see that the BAFTAs didn't nominate it. I have high hope that the Academy will nominate it as one of their Best Picture nominees here. But also Room, this movie Room, from Irish writer, is so haunting and powerful. And Brie Larson, who is absolutely my new talent crush, she gives one of my all-time five favorite performances by any actress in motion picture history. How about that? And then Bridge of Spies is certainly halfway a good movie. The first half is outstanding. Second half, not outstanding.
You see, if you were following the cultural sort of zeitgeist of the whole thing and went back to the 31st of August 2011, you would find that Gemma Donahue's next text, Room, was indeed selected as our August Book of the Month. So we were way ahead of the game.
We were ahead of the game
there. That's the 31st of August, 2011, if you wish to actually a unanimous thumbs up from Jill Appleton and the Book of the Month team, Jill Prowse, Rob Nichols, and Alex Lefchuk for the August Book of the Month podcast selection. 31st of August, 2011, if you want to check it out on the southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com site, Phil. I'll send you the link.
As always, Alex Lefchuk with his hand on the pulse.
We're moving backwards in time. Time warp. We may risk it someday, Mr. Spock.
Now, with all this talk of Star Wars in its Star Wars, well, there has been a lot of talk about Star Wars, but also Star Trek being in its 50th and final year, if the atrocious nature of Star Trek Beyond is any indication. What do you get, Alex, when you cross Star Trek with Fast and the Furious? You get Fast and the Furious.
And the
with
Beastie
all
Boys.
The talk of that. On this show, yeah, boy, it's just less said about that. And believe me, very little will be said about that when that comes out in theaters. I might be sick the day it's in cinema. Has there been any discussion on the show about the return of Sherlock?
No.
Oh, no. Let's talk about that.
Yes. I mean, because here in Spectre, as I was talking about no worthy villain, however, Andrew Scott, the wonderful actor Andrew Scott, I believe that's his name, appears in a fun supporting role in Spectre as one of Bond's new superiors, who turns out to have a little bit of an evil agenda. And that whole movie, Spectre, I kept, every time he came on screen, going, well, here's a guy who should be the James Bond villain. After all, he's so outstanding as Moriarty in the Sherlock series, and oh my goodness, we got him back in The Abominable Bride, and it was such good fun.
Yeah, I agree. I think Andrew Scott's brilliant. He's just makes the character so psychotic and creepy, and it's really, really good. And I thought that this Christmas episode, The Abominable Bride, was really, like, it was really different. I thought it was really interesting to do the whole episode in Sherlock's mind palace, I think he calls it. And I thought that was a really interesting concept. At first, I was a little bit iffy about it, but I think it did work in the end. I thought it was really, really good.
I thought it was great as a way also to set up its return eventually, because when they find out their schedules, when they work out their schedules, there will be another, three-episode or three-movie run. So it was nice to have one now to kind of give us a little bit of a joy of a standalone episode, but also remind us what's come before, remind us what's at stake in the future, and also to deal head-on with Sherlock's drug addiction, I thought was really quite a nice choice.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think it was really, really cleverly done. And I think you're right. Like, it was a nice little tease for the fans as to what may happen in the future.
He's going to meet Doctor Who. That's the grand Stephen Moffat.
No, we can't cross that over.
I will. It'd be like crossing the polarity of the neutron flow.
No.
Reversing it.
But,
If you're an Andrew Scott fan, and this sounds very odd to recommend a movie that where he does not appear on screen for a single second, but he gives a great performance nevertheless. There's a movie called Locke, starring Tom Hardy, where it's all Tom Hardy on screen the entire movie as he drives to London from some outlying construction project. And during the process of the hour and a half drive to London, his life unravels through a series of phone calls that he has to make. And one of the people that he keeps talking to regularly is played by Andrew Scott, who's on the other end of the phone. And you know, you think to yourself, okay, well, this is just a voiceover performance that all these other actors are giving. But at some point during the film, it was so effective and so compelling, and the chemistry was so real between Tom Hardy on screen and all these actors off, that I had to look into how they made it. I had this sneaking suspicion that we weren't recording these at separate times, that these were live calls being recorded. And sure enough, the way that they made this this movie, Locke, was they did it as a play each night. They set Tom Hardy out in the car. They filmed the entire script all the way through once. Then they broke for dinner. They shot it through a second time. And they did this for 2 weeks. So they made the whole movie basically 24 times they shot it. And all the other actors that he talked to were stationed in a hotel conference room that had been converted to an old-time radio studio, where each actor had their own set with their own props. So if you were, let's say, in a kitchen supposedly cooking dinner, you as the actor were given a functional kitchen with everything that you needed, so that while you carried out your phone conversation, even though you were off camera, you would be making dinner the whole time, so that your performance would really be authentic. And I've got to tell you, his performance as a voice only is amazing in this movie, Locke. It's a great film, a lot of fun.
Okay, so we're just returning briefly to SFX Magazine and Star Trek and the dream cast put forward by Star Trek readers, SFX readers, of course, and Star Trek readers, for the new series. We'll run this past Phil Leonis. What do you think, Emma? Should we do this?
Go for it.
In the role of engineer, Nick Frost. In the role of first officer, Rooney Mara. In the role of the Doctor, Gina Torres. In the role of Federation President, Wesley Crusher, Will Wheaton.
Of course.
And as
slightly
captain,
older now.
as captain from, of course, Downton Abbey, English actor Dan Stevens. Would that work, Phil?
Now, do I have to say who cares for each individual, or just one? Well, who cares? Work one. You know, this whole dangerous and sad and really lazy and boring need for nostalgia in everything.
That's like saying you're going to have another Death Star in another Star Wars again.
Oh,
and you're
going
to have
goodness.
Another family problem. And you're going to have people being stabbed by their relatives. And it's going to be all sort of
It's like saying The Force Awakens, when really it's groggy and badly in need of coffee. So, you know, all of this, people can have it. They can eat it up. It's breads and circuses. But there is so much new and exciting work. I liked hearing your favorite shows that you had caught up on over the holidays. I certainly hope you'll take the time to catch Jessica Jones. This is a fantastic show.
I'm halfway through Jessica Jones at the moment, and I love it.
AKA Jessica Jones.
Yes.
are superb, and it deals straightforward with concepts like PTSD. It's a terrific show, and better still, along with, I would say, Fargo, you know, the pinnacle of television over the last year, Mr. Robot. This is a show that you need to check out.
More than extant with Halle Berry.
Oh my goodness, Mr. Robot is every
the man
bit
in the High Fight Castle. Club.
It's Fight Club meets The Prisoner. And it's that important, and it's that good.
When you
cover of Time magazine, no less.
When you said Fight Club meets The Prisoner, I can only say Eva McDonald, number between 2 and 26, please.
I will go for 21.
On for 21. Any particular Very reason high. For 21?
No, just that.
21, the first official Mike Dooley in Thought from the Universe for 2016, as selected by Eva McDonald.
To set the record straight, however cool you think it might be to have an out-of-body experience floating over your house, flying through space, traversing the past, present, and future, let me tell you, it'll never be as cool as being in the one you now have. Walking barefoot in the grass, floating on the sun-drenched pool, or dancing alone in the dark. You so fly the universe. Trust me, from here, getting into body is considered the most sacred of all sacreds.
So there we have it. Sums it all up and perfectly sort of preparing for the joys of astral travelling, which is pretty much what we like to do on the show. And we'll do tomorrow morning, of course, with Midweek Drive Morning Edition, where we'll be joined by Ellie Sample, Director of Communications from the University of Lincoln. Hopefully Mary Dancy will be with us. Gabriella Peralta, our contributor from Gibraltar, will be with us. Are you going to be with us, Eva McDonald?
I am doing my NVQ.
She's NVQing. Aww. She's TLAing, three-letter acronym.
So
strange. She'd be out of body experiencing in all sorts of ways. Richard Fitzwilliams will be back. As you said, Emma, we could have left him on. Just left the channel going, picked him up again, 12 hours time. We would have been no difference whatsoever, 14 hours. Bless him. We love him. Ian Lennox, of course, will be back with us. Sarah Huntley will be joining us. So will William Sitwell. And Orla Huguenot from Public Health England will be talking about the spectre of sugar. Plus, we'll also be finding out a little bit more about people's habits of basically novelties and all sorts of other bits and pieces. So it's all good. It's a bit of a trailer head as far as the show's concerned. More great music coming up as far as Siren's concerned after the news from the Sky News people. But would you like to put those last two questions to Phil Leonis, please? Emma?
Of course. Phil, have you had a reasonably good telephonic link with us today?
I enjoyed beginning with a correction, so I'll end with a correction, Alex. The FBI and the Drug Enforcement Agency are not the same thing, and David Duchovny played a DEA agent.
Was it really?
Other than that, I had a fantastic time.
Fantastic. And will you be joining us again on the program anytime soon?
I don't know. If I get the show banned from many more workplaces, I think I will be disinvited.
Phil.
And if you keep correcting
as far as
people.
As far as I'm heard, we're going down very well in North Korea. It's the sort of, it's music to listen to your bombs go off by. You know, I've already had the salutes that have been coming through, so I think good news as far
just
as that's
so
concerned.
Popular.
We've made the North Korean market. So hurrah, hurrah, and hurrah again. Lincoln's first community radio station with the Midweek Drive continues ever onwards. I'll hopefully be getting a voice that's getting vaguely better on a day-by-day basis. That I'll just choke to death with the emotional all. Emma, thank you for joining us today.
No problem. I've had a lovely show.
And likewise, Eva McDonald.
Thank you very much.
A pleasure from that point of view. We will continue ever onwards into season 2016.
Yay!
Of the Midweek Drive.
Yay!
Yeah, and don't forget, of course, Chillpack Hollywood, equally positive, over 8 years now. Now on 8 years of non-stop quality broadcasting by your friends in podcasting, Dean Wilkinson. No, Dean Hagland. Easily confused, and Phil Leonis. It's great stuff. Paul McCartney's taking us out. Can we say bye-bye?
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Picking up scales and broken chords, up your dovetails in the House of Lords. Tell me, darling.